to the Chelsea Skidmore Show. I am here today with my guest, writer and beautiful woman, Amy Dresner. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Chels. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here. It's good to see you. Why are you laughing? I love how we were just
because we were just completely different people like 15 minutes before this.
Well, yeah. Well, we were talking about some heavy shit, and then we were like, okay, let's just like compartmentalize
and then
that.
We're like, hi.
And now we're like, okay, let's just turn it on. Hi, what's going on?
It's good to see you. I haven't seen you in person in a while. Yeah.
Have you seen anyone in person? Yeah. I mean, yeah, I haven't seen anyone in person.
Not at all.
Oh, yeah. No. Very few people.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit paranoid about it.
I get that. You know? I meet up with friends, you know, every once in a while. I just feel like, you know, there's a period of time that I didn't, obviously, in the first couple months. And then I was like, all right, I need to socialize. And it just, you know,
I trust totally that we're all plunged being me safe. Into a depression for sure. Like I started, well, I work from home too. So I started to really start to like, I was like, you know, it was like me and Colonel Puff Puff, my cat. And I was like, and I just thought, you know, I've got to, I mean, I would just talk to the grocery store and I was just so like like the cashier. I was like, how are you? How's your day? How's your family? Hello. I love you. I missed you. They were like, oh my God, weirdo. I was like, I needed social connections so fucking much. It was like, you know, like I don't like people, but like people annoy me, but like, I want to be able to go and like be connected and then like withdraw and do my thing. Do you know what I mean? And then I was like, and also being a fucking recovering drug addict and alcoholic, like isolation is like the worst thing for us. Like I'm in my head and my head is just telling me the worst shit ever. And I'm like, whoa, I gotta get
totally. It. And I was taking shit personal, like when I knew I shouldn't have, but like in the beginning when I was walking on the street and people would be like avoiding you and like running to the other side of the street, it was hurting my feelings.
Right.
It was, and I was taking it. And I knew.
Are you cough? And people like fucking scatter. Like you're like
totally.
I've an almond caught in my throat, bitch. Like what?
I had to talk about it in therapy. She's like, "Why does that hurt your feelings?" I'm like, "I don't know. It just does." But I'm over it now. Now I don't care anymore, and I feel like that's people good. Aren't as crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it was like everything was social media, and it was like, oh God. Like, and then everything's really hot with the election and it's like, ugh, I just can't, I'm like, whoa. I posted one thing that was slightly political because it had to do with recovery and the amount of fucking bullshit I got, I just restricted the comments finally.
Oh, really?
There's a reason I stay away from all that because people were going bananas and I was just like,
Yeah, I don't like to discuss anything political on social media. I just find it to be too exhausting and it opens up like such emotional doors.
Totally.
I just like can't handle it. Yeah.
Totally. No, but I mean, as a recovery advocate, I felt like I needed to comment on this one specific thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is not political. If you've got something political to say, like keep fucking scrolling. Like this is about addiction and blah, blah. You know what I mean? And like, and of course everyone like came at me and I was just like, okay, I just realized I could turn comments off last night and I was like, free God. I've never felt so free in my life. I was like, fucking yes.
I need to figure out how to do that.
It's really easy. So like you can turn it off on certain posts. So you can just people going crazy on a post. You can just be like, fucking shut the fuck up. Bye. Bye. Yeah.
So I obviously I've known you for years, but I don't really know so much about your story. Like I don't know where you're from.
Friends with me.
No, I know you had an interesting life growing up. I mean, Steven tells me that you have interesting parents and a wild childhood or something. Is that right?
No, I mean
your parents writers too?
My father was a writer. My mother was a fashion designer and a model. I think your mom was a model too, right?
Yeah. I was just like, do we have the same family?
I know. Was dad a writer too?
No, he worked in fashion, but it's like the same kind of thing.
Yeah. So
fashion and writing isn't the same thing, but I'm just saying same kind of parental
yeah
vibe.
Like when you're raised by cool. two artists, it's interesting. Yeah. So they split when I was born in LA, grew up here, like went to Westlake, which was like with Tori Spelling and all those bitches, like, you know, like uniforms, like private uniform girls school. And I was very, very, very pure. And I was like, drugs are bad and I'm a good girl and blah, blah. And sex is bad. And my, you know, it was like, you know, and I was living with my dad at the time. My mother was living in Mexico, weaving rugs. She'd moved into like textile design. And so anyway, he had made a bet with me that I would smoke or drink or do drugs before I was 18. And I was like, okay, man. And he was, I'm going to make this terrible joke that that's how Jews raise each other. We just bribe each other, which is actually true. He bribed me on everything. Like he bribed me with my grades. He paid me for like, you know, my bowling scores. Like, it's like all this. Like, everything was like my, like, you know, if I could get a point up, I got money. And I was like, no wonder I'm fucked up. But anyway.
Yeah.
I waited till I was about 19 to drink. So I was really a good girl. But there's a lot of mental illness and addiction in my family on both sides. Yeah, my dad did a lot of, you know, some cool sitcoms in the 70s and 80s and movies and some really schlocky garbage too, but it all paid the bills. Mm-hmm. And then I was 19 and I started drinking in college just because I like showed up at college and I was like, you guys, I don't drink and I'm a virgin. And people were like, ew, you know? And I was
you
like,
you were
oh,
a virgin?
Shit. Yeah, until I was 19.
Wow. What college did you go to?
I went to Santa Cruz and then I went to Emerson. Yeah, and then I became sport fucker extraordinaire. Yeah, God, it's weird.
Emerson is the showbiz school, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of.
Yeah. So I was still pretty good in college, kind of had a nervous breakdown and became anorexic and kind of lost my shit. And I was drinking and backing out, but mostly it was like the eating disorder and the depression, but I still managed to graduate with really high grades. It was when I got out of college that like without the structure that I just completely fucking fell apart. I was very much like a spoiled brat kid and everyone did everything for me. And so what happens when you do that is you don't learn how to do anything for yourself, mm-hmm. you know, and you're afraid to do anything for yourself. So it's like, it becomes a real fucking issue. So
yeah. Were you one of those kids in college who didn't know how to boil water for pasta or do their laundry?
Exactly. I never cooked in the dorm ever, but I mean, well, I was anorexic, so I wasn't really eating. I was in fucking deep shit,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Like I could do laundry, but like even now, I mean, I can't cook. Yeah. I mean, I can, you know, I can cook
really?
Dope. Yeah. That's what I can cook for you. Like, I can come over and fucking, dope. Yeah. Like, that's what I know how to make a craft bong out of a fucking Mountain Dew bottle, but like, I don't know how to do my taxes. Like, that's, yeah. I'm still all fucked
that's
up.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Well, then I became that's a drug so addict for 25 years, you know, in and out of treatment and whatever. And so it's like, and I was like raised with maids. So I'm just like kind of like dirty and don't know how to do anything, but like overly educated. It's a very weird combination. People are like, you're really smart, but you're really stupid in some ways. I'm like, I know. Yeah, like didn't change my oil for 7 years. They're like, what? The Jiffy
really?
Yes, I know. I didn't know. I'm a girl. I'm a Jew. We don't know about cars. I didn't know. Like a light didn't come on. I didn't know. Yeah, they were like, when's the last time you got your oil changed? I'm like, when I first got sober, like I'm like, oh, 7 years ago. The guy was like, oh my fucking God. He flipped out. I was like, but
did the car get ruined?
A rolling vein, bitch. And he was like, okay, I'm waiting for you, I'll see you. Like, sit down.
Wait, what is a rolling vein? Is that finding
like
a good vein
on the
your
top that like you can't shoot into because they fucking roll. Because they roll. No, the ones on
wait,
down
do
here
mean
don't
roll
so
roll?
Much. The ones on the top are hard to hit because they fucking move. So you can't get them. You can't stab them that easily. It's nothing that you need to know.
I've,
really.
I've never now. Shot anything.
Let's keep it that way. That's a whole
I don't
other,
want to.
Yeah. It's a whole other fucking ball game and it's gnarly.
What were you really? Shooting?
Coke.
Yeah. But I don't you didn't like the high of just like I love the high of just snorting coke. I don't like smoking it. Like was it just like you were
oh,
just looking
you,
for a different
even better. Shooting coke's like way better.
Really?
Yeah, well it's like it's, but it's very fast. It's like crack. And then it's like a very quick rush. Like you're like, oh my God, I'm going to come and I'm on a scary roller coaster. Ah! It's over. You know what I mean? Like mixed with like, am I going to die? Oh my God. And it's done. And then you're just kind of gacked out and you want the rush. So you keep doing it over and over and over again. It's a fucking nightmare. It's a fucking nightmare.
Wow.
So I
19
got,
in college.
Yeah. So I started drinking in college, but it was at 24 that I found crystal meth, which I was like, that was it for me. I was like, oh, fuck yeah. Like, this is Prozac with wings. Hello. Like, why aren't they giving me this? Like, I feel normal. And I became a tweaker for like 2 years and it was a, you know, it was a fucking nightmare. I mean, like staying up for 17 days and writing a new Bible and, you know.
Did you do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You stayed up for 17 days straight?
And now I've uploaded.
And you tried to write a new Bible.
Yeah, based on Emerson and Nietzsche. So it could have been a really cool Bible. It could have been like very progressive if you think about it. But like that's how.
How much did you write?
Oh, I don't even know. There's a carton that I won't open that just has so much bad juju. That's like all shit I wrote when I was on speed, and I just it's taped up and it's in the closet, and I refuse to open it. I'm so freaked out by it.
Let me ask you this. You know how like you see people walking down the street who are like super high on drugs and obviously like mentally ill and they're like homeless rambling around, but they look like they were once like successful, attractive people. And like they sometimes have like good outfits on still, and but they look like they've been on the street for like maybe like 30 days like high. Like, okay. So when you say you were high for 17 days, like I always wonder, like how do people get to that stage when they look like they're like kind of normal people? Do you know?
I mean, that like, stuff breaks my, that stuff breaks my heart. I mean, if I, you
me
know,
too.
Should I ever get to a place where I'm successful enough, I want to create a program for like homeless, like mentally ill drug addicts. That shit destroys me. Cause that's someone's kid, man. That's someone's brother. That's someone's daughter. That's someone's sister. It's fucking kills me. And I mean, I was had my apartment and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, thank God for my friends and family, because I totally could have fallen through the cracks, you know? I don't know how.
But it's like, were you like on that level, like 17 days in? Because I can't imagine. No, what I mean, I 17 wasn't
that
days.
Fucking, I mean, I wasn't that I wasn't that delusional. I just thought I had the mathematical equation for God. I mean, I didn't feel that delusional at the time. And I wasn't like hallucinating and I didn't have like a psychotic break. I didn't have an amphetamine psychosis. But later, I had a seizure. And then 5 years clean, I started having multiple seizures and now I have epilepsy, like I have chronic.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've had epilepsy for 15 years. Yeah.
I didn't even know that you had that.
Yeah. And I got it from the guy was like, I was living in Paris and he was like doing fashion stuff. And he was like, did you do a lot of drugs? And I was like, he was like, you have a hyperactive lesions on your brain from doing too many drugs. And I was like, fuck. So yeah, it's been a real trial and error to find the right medication. I've cracked my head open. I had like 12 grand mal seizures. I've lost my license twice. I've broken teeth. I've fallen on my face and gotten stitches in my face. It's been bad. It's been a whole thing.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I mean, you play, you pay. I mean,
does something trigger them specifically or do they just come on out of nowhere?
Well, I haven't had a seizure now in 7.5 years. I'm on 2 really hardcore medications. Stress, being really emotionally upset, and too much caffeine and cocaine. Like shooting cocaine while I had epilepsy probably wasn't the best idea I've ever fucking had. So wow. I relapsed and I was shooting cocaine and I already knew I had epilepsy. So So I'd try and like shoot coke and like fall in a pit of pillows. Like I was like, I don't want to crack my head open or have a seizure. Or then I just was like, I'll wear a bike helmet. Fuck it. And I shot coke wearing a bike helmet. So I wouldn't fucking crack my head open, which made total sense to me at the time. But it was just a nightmare. It was, I would get clean for a couple of years. I would relapse, clean, relapse. I've been in 7 rehabs. I've been in 4 psych wards, you know, I've tried to kill myself a couple
Alhambra?
Times. Alhambra, is that a nice one?
No, that's where I went. I hated it.
No, they're all horrible. I think that I hear okay. UCLA is the nicest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they didn't take my insurance. No, I've been to Glendale Adventist twice, and I've been to what was Thalians at Cedars-Sinai twice, the now defunct. Mm. So.
And were you 5150'd or?
Yeah.
Why did you go when you went all four times?
Yeah. So if you know any nice men for me. yeah. One time I was really high on Ativan. I was in a blackout for 2 weeks. And I was like in meetings, kicking over chairs and being like, I'm a princess, motherfuckers. And I don't remember any of it. And my dad was like, you need to go somewhere and cool out. And I was like, do you mean like a spa? And he was like, kind of. And I was so fucking high. I checked myself into Thalians thinking it was a spa. And then I came to And I was like, they told me this is a spa. That's why I brought my bathing suit. I mean, I really seemed insane, but I wasn't. The other three were either I couldn't stop drinking or I had like fucking like taken too many pills, or I'd slit my wrist or, you know, tried to check out. So I wrote a book called My Fair Junkie. It came out in 2017. The big thing was, and I knew Steven when I was married, which is so funny. And I would go to a meeting that was all just comics, sober comics, male sober comics, and me. And it was like, you know, because I'm such a dude. And they loved me. And I felt comfortable. And it was great. Anyway, on December 25th of 2011, I pulled a knife on my now ex-husband. I was really high on OxyContin and Four Loko. So
what a combo.
I know. Four Loko is so fucking gross. But it does. It gets you where you need to be. So it got physical. I pulled a knife on him. He called the cops on me. I got arrested for a felony domestic violence with a deadly weapon. And I went to jail.
For just pulling a knife out?
Correct.
You get a felony?
Correct.
Wow.
If you
and how long did you have to go to
brandish a weapon, you're fucked. That's a weapon.
Wow.
In Hollywood, the sheriffs came and they fucking arrested me. I didn't even stab him. I just I went like that. Yeah. But it was, yeah. So
and how long did you have to go to jail for?
Well, I got my, you know, I'm a manipulative fucker. So, I mean, I was like, you know, it turned out that one of my old sponsees had become a bail bonds woman. I was like, yes! You know, I was like, this is, you know. So it's Christmas and like no one gets arrested on Christmas except assholes like me. And they're like, you have, you know, they throw me in a cell and they're like, you have a couple phone calls, you know, like, and I'm like, can I get my phone? I'm so high now. I'm on OxyContin and Valium. And I don't even know. I'm so, and I started to black out. So I don't even remember like a bunch of it. But I got a couple numbers out of my phone and one was my old sponsee. And I called her and she was like, oh my God, Amy, my old sponsor, like Merry Christmas. And I was like, hi, I'm in jail. She was like, oh, okay. So I was only in for about 5 hours, but I did get, it got dropped to a misdemeanor, but I was given a year of domestic violence counseling and 240 hours of community labor, which was me sweeping the streets. Like me.
Did you stay together after that?
Would you stay with someone who tried to kill you?
Well, we I've been in so many like relationships.
People are like, really? Like, why did he call the cops? Like, I went back to the house after the incident and we were fighting and I was detoxing off Oxy. We did try and reunite at one point and it just wasn't really happening. So, but, yeah, so I was on a chain gang for 240 hours, which was like, so it was me and like 30 Mexican guys and I showed up and I was such a princess still. So I was like, oh my God, like these people are criminals. Like, what am I doing here? Like, and they were like, what you here for, Weta? Huh? I'm here for a DUI. What you here for, bitch? And I was like, oh, I'm here for felony domestic violence with a deadly weapon. They were like, oh shit, you know? So I was there, like one of the few people there for assault and like the only, and I had more time than anybody else. So it was very humbling and I was in sober living for like 2.5 years and Medi-Cal disability.
Is that where you live with my friend?
No, that was rehab. One of the many times I was at that rehab. Yeah. That was right after I tried to kill myself. I went to that rehab and then we lived together for a while. Yeah. And then I drank in that rehab with her. She was my roommate and I drank vodka and then they kicked
me out. With her there?
They kicked me out and then they took me back to detox me and then sent me to a sober living Tarzana where I drank again. And then they kicked me out. And then, so then I ended up at a sober living for 2.5 years and I've been sober ever since. You just need to lose everything and then you'll fucking get it.
I know. That's like the hard thing about getting sober. I feel like obviously like a lot of people who aren't really familiar with addiction or people who drink, they just see people getting fucked up over and over again. And, you know, everyone around them wants them to stop. But you really have to hit a bottom to fucking stop and just like have to be so spiritually depleted to just have to be like, fine, I'm fucking done. And it's crazy because you have those big moments and then a couple years later, you'll end up relapsing again.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, that's exactly
and
my story.
It's like, it doesn't.
Yeah. We don't remember. We don't remember either. I think we either we don't care or we think it's going to be different. It doesn't either. We're in too much pain and I'm like, I got to get out. Like a breakup. Those destroyed me always. Breakups always fucked me up. I would always relapse over breakups. And
that's why I relapsed too.
You know, I remember
4 years ago.
Yeah,
4 years ago. Yeah, I dated an asshole comic. We were talking about
don't ever date
before.
Asshole comics. That's my life.
Yeah, and it really just like I just could not handle it. And you know, I always like, you know, whenever I'm sharing in a meeting about kind of why I relapsed, I really do believe it's because I just didn't pick up the phone and call anyone. Like in that moment when I found out that he cheated on me and he like rubbed it in my face and I got so upset, like my first thought was like, I can't sit in this and I have to go drink and like I just have to go to the liquor store in the corner and like that's just it. And it's and I like think back like what could I have done differently, and it's like I could have picked up the phone and made a call to a sponsor,
and you
to a
might
friend
have gotten talked out of it, and you might not have, but totally. At least you would have gotten given yourself that opportunity. I mean, I'll have 8 years in January. There have been plenty of times. My mom has dementia. My dad got cancer. Like, you know, I got someone that we know broke my heart into a billion fucking pieces. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of ups and downs in my career. Like, and definitely there's been times when I wanted to fucking get loaded and I called my sponsor and I just, you know, even and got talked out of it, even if I didn't want to. And I was like, you can fucking get loaded after you call, Amy, just fucking call. Mm-hmm. And then I always ended up getting talked out of it.
Yeah. It's amazing how you can and how even just like, you know, how time can just a little bit of time, like the feelings will just pass, because it's like when you have that urge to like want to get fucked up, it's all you can think about. And you're in that very much like,
yes,
I don't give a fuck state. And exactly. I want to do what I want to do. And no one else can tell me what to do. And if you it's pretty magical how just one phone call, you know, picking up phone, talking to a friend and waiting a couple of hours. And then it's like,
so
okay, I feel fine.
Though.
I got out of it.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's crazy.
Yeah. But
have you had any, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I try and tell people, I'm like, urges pass, they pass. I promise, whether you use or not, like the feelings feel like they're going to kill you. You don't have to fucking run away from them. You don't have to numb it. Like you can, you know, and I became a sex addict in this sobriety too, early on.
Duh. I used to go to slaw.
Duh.
I went for a couple of years. It's like everyone who gets sober becomes another addict.
What an unattractive crew, right? Were you sort of surprised? I mean, everyone's so ugly. Like,
I didn't. I was like, who's fucking you?
Blind people? Like, I don't get it. I was like, fucking, like, you guys are fucking so much. It's a problem. Like, I thought it was going to be really hot people. And I was like, oh. But I just, was actually worse. For me, emotionally, that was worse than my drug addiction. It was so humiliating.
Yeah, I don't want to slam that particular 12-step group, but it is hard to find good meetings. I do believe they exist in that, for that particular
it's
program.
It's not for me.
Yeah, yeah, a friend of mine has like a really good group of guys that they go to, and they're all successful men who are in a different space. I never found those meetings.
I agree.
I was, and yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was just on Tinder. Yeah, I remember, like, shooting fish in a barrel. It was so gnarly. It was just so gnarly. I mean, and I talk about that in the book, really honestly. And that was the hardest shit to write. That was harder than like writing about shooting up in my neck or whatever. Because what as was? Women were just like, you know, be a female sex. First of all, being a female perpetrator of domestic violence is like highly rare and frowned upon.
Yeah.
And then being a female sex addict, like if you're a male sex addict, you're kind of studly, but if you're a female, you're a slut, you're a whore. You know, mm-hmm. It's not seen as an illness. It's not seen as being sexually positive. It's not seen as being empowered. You're considered slutty. And
yeah,
you know,
for, I really struggled with intrigue, like having,
right?
Yeah, which is, you know, like just testing people's fucking temperatures, putting out some weird comment, or like just creating like a weird vibe with a guy. Just
though, but that's because
it's all, it's a high. It's like, I don't even need the end result. I just want to like manipulate the moment into some weird thing. And I truly like, I felt like a predator energy. And it wasn't like, I'm not saying like the predator in terms of like
the Me Too.
From me, but it wasn't like Me Too level like predator. I just want to make that clear. Like, I wasn't like doing any weird shit like that. It was more just like the way that I was like relating to men. Mm-hmm, like it, the energy underneath it was very much like I was getting like power and control like
through validation and through manipulation.
Yes,
and I think that's also just part of being sort of like an attractive woman in society, where we're taught to use that to manipulate.
Mm-hmm.
So then, mm-hmm. I mean, then it becomes really, I mean, you know, obviously like slaw stuff and sex addiction is like a pathological level, and also us getting like a super big high off of it. I mean, there is all biochemistry that supports that you get a dopamine rush and you get mm-hmm. a high. It's not just
totally
like
I used to be. When I was in my addiction, I was one of those girls who would flirt with guys who had girlfriends and who were married men. And it would make me feel better about myself to get the attention from them. And now I'm so opposite from that. And I have
totally
friends who do that. And it really bothers me. Yeah. And, you know, a very close friend of mine hooks up with a lot of married men. And I had to ask her to stop telling me about it because it was triggering me and making me feel bad about my own past. You know, it wasn't in like, and it's hard to hear like today,
well, also,
you know,
well, also, you're also, you're also, you're also what marriage means. I mean, I used to, I dated men, married men until I had been married. And then once mm-hmm. I knew what marriage really fucking entailed, I didn't really do that again. But when I was in my addiction, I did hook up with some people that live with their girlfriends, and that made me feel like garbage. But it was like, I was such a junkie mentality where I was like, I got to get what I need. I got to get mine. And mm-hmm. it was like, just, it was survival mode. It was like really like lizard brain shit. And it's like, so, mm-hmm. and it's hard because with drugs, you can just, drugs and alcohol, you can be abstinent. You know what I mean? But with like food stuff or sex and love stuff, you've got to moderate and find that middle ground.
And it's still hard. I mean, yeah, there is no middle ground for a lot of like, you know, it's so black and white for like a lot of addicts, I feel like. But today I try to, you know, do things differently. But even with like, you know, I still do everything like pretty alcoholically, like especially with like work mm-hmm. stuff. Like when I first got sober, I was dating a guy who was like he was sober and he was a complete workaholic, but I was like, you know, my first 90 days, so I was like pretty I guess like lazy, or just like I wasn't really following through with a lot of stuff, you know. I was just kind of like floating around like trying to be hot. But and I was always so jealous of him, and I was like, I want to be a workaholic. Like now I feel like he was just avoiding me and like staying busy because he didn't want to be around me that much. But like today, like I'm like, oh, I'm finally that like workaholic I wanted to be. And it's so hard to like turn my brain off and like stop checking things off lists. And like I feel like it's like there's so much I have to do. There's so much I have to make up for. Like, do you have that like thing of like, I lost so much time and I feel like I need to like catch up?
Right. No, I mean, I see my addiction in everything, always. Mm-hmm. You know, a weird compulsivity, a weird obsession, a weird whatever, you know, and it's really difficult. I don't know that I'm a workaholic. I'm kind of a lazy piece of shit, but I'm definitely less lazy than I used to be. And also, you know, once everyone pulled the financial stuff in, I was had to support myself. That was like, oh shit. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I remember when my dad cut me off, it was like in my 40s. And I was like, really? It's just so early. He's like, you're fucking 42.
You said that?
Like, really? I was like, it's like, you know. I mean, but having people fucking pay for your shit, you know, there's control aspect. They control you. I mean, it doesn't let you have any self-esteem. And it took me a really long time to get out of that sort of victim thing. And also, like, I wanted everyone to take care of me. That was a huge part of my addiction, mm-hmm. was I didn't want to take responsibility. And I wanted you to take care of me. You're going to take care of everything. And now my mom has dementia and I have to do, I'm her power of attorney. I'm her Social Security payee. I have to deal with her nurse, the chaplain, the head of the assisted living, the social worker, the bank, the, you know, I mean, I think you meet your destiny on the road, you go to avoid it, really. I mean, the universe was like, oh, you don't want to take care of yourself or other people? You don't want to deal with money? Here, bitch. And I was like, ooh, time to grow up, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's been really, you know, if it wasn't forced on me, I probably wouldn't have done it. But, you know, I don't think people understand chronic relapsers, how easy it is. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the norm more than it is like people just get like rolling on a court card and get sober and stay sober. Like what weirdos, like most people relapse.
Yeah, I mean, with the chronic relapsers, I'm thinking about a guy we were both talking about earlier. Do you know who I'm thinking about when I say
yes.
that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't I relapsed, you know, like a couple times, like in the beginning, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't know I could smoke weed. I had to restart. At 90 days, I restarted because I went to like a bachelor party and I ended up drinking that I was working at when I was a stripper in like early sobriety. And then I got 3 years and then I relapsed. So like, to me, they were like very small, but the people who chronically relapse like nonstop, like multiple times a year and like have been in AA for like a super long time, but they're always relapsing. That is like hard for me to understand. And I know I need more compassion with that, but like my brain like just doesn't compute it. And like for me, what I feel like it is, I mean, besides it being a disease, I also feel like it's just like willingness. Like, am I wrong? Like, can you, like, I just don't understand it.
I think there's a spectrum of addiction. I mean, I think that some people are over here and some people have it really, really bad and are over here. Mm-hmm. I think it depends on what you're coming in with in terms of mental illness and trauma also. I would say, you know, for some people, you know, although I'm, you know, in 12 step two, like if you're doing 12 step for 20 years and it's not working, try something fucking else. You know what I mean? Maybe that's not the way for you. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I also think for me, I mean, I can only think about myself, which was I needed the whole rug to be pulled out from under me. As long as people were still willing to be manipulated by me and do stuff for me and pay for stuff, and whatever, that was a big part of it. And I think it's a big part of who we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like a lot of these people who are chronic relapsers also never do the fucking work. Like, I doubt any of them have worked all 12 steps.
I don't know. I really don't know. But I know people who have done, I mean, I did all the steps and still relapsed. So it's like, I mean, I don't think it's that simple. And it's like, I mean, I try not to judge those people. I mean, I have a friend who keeps relapsing a lot. And I was like the only person who was still talking to him because it's like kind of sad when you know, everyone sort of cuts you off, like, which makes it all look like really cult-like, you know what I mean? Like, well, you're not sober, so we don't talk to you anymore. It's like, okay.
You're an SP. Like
someone has to be the person that's going to be like the link to bring them back. But I got to a place where, you know, it was devolving and getting really, really, really scary. And I was starting to feel really frustrated. And I was also sort of put off by his nonchalance. Like, oh, like I almost died at the weekend, but no biggie. Like, here I am, like, call me back. And I was like, you know, or whatever, like, you know, I'm in, you know, I'm calling you from the psych ward. I, you know, I check out on Monday. It's like, bitch, you're not checking out. It's not a fucking Hyatt. You know what I mean? Like, releasing you on my, like, I don't think you're getting the gravity of the situation. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I just also with my parents being ill and, you know, I have a lot of strangers that reach out to me because of the book and the podcast. And so, and I also lead a sobriety support group that's out of Laura McCowan's, the We Are the Luckiest. It's like just in general, like,
wait, what's that? And, you know,
so she wrote a book called We Are the Luckiest. And so there are meetings and it's like, you can be, it's just a sobriety support and all like whatever you're doing is welcome. Like you can be an AA or not. And it's like, you know, topics and meetings, and their meetings are huge. And I run Fridays and it's like been a really dope experience and it's all love. It's like all love. It's kind of incredible. So I have enough on my plate and I just kind of just didn't respond. And to me, no response is a response. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't really, this is hard to watch. And I don't think that you're going to fucking die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you not taking it seriously? Do you know how many people I know who are dead? Like, I don't really have the energy for it anymore. And also totally. Like, I mean, not that rehab doesn't, I mean, I've been 7 rehabs, but if you've never fucking been in rehab, go to fucking rehab. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I mean, I think everyone's got a different kind of journey. So I try not to judge, you know, because I could eat it again. Yeah. I could eat it again. So
totally. Totally. Me too. Yeah. I mean, little things pop up all the time that, you know, sometimes I'll be like, fuck, like I really want to drink and, you know, and I'll get right through it. But like, of course, everything pops up. I guess it's the people who don't get it. And are constantly relapsing over and over again. That's what's hard for me to understand. But maybe I don't have to understand it, you know?
No, and I think that you're also not realizing that the amount of people that recover is actually really small. We're very lucky.
Mm-hmm.
If not the majority that recovers. The majority doesn't recover.
Mm. No, you're right.
You know what I mean?
Good point. Yeah. So let's get into the book. What was your process like to write it? Did you, and then, was it like, had you always wanted to write a book about like your life?
Yeah,
sort of
I'd
thing,
always
and
wanted
then...
to write a book. Yeah. I'd always wanted to write a book. I'd always been a writer since I was a little girl. My dad was a writer. Mm-hmm. I was a daddy's girl and I would write, you know, stuff and like, you know, so I'd been chronicling some of my shit all along, like in my 20s. And like part of it was when I was high on speed and when, you know, and then in my 30s, I've been writing stuff and I kept like, there's a zillion, you know, half done manuscripts on my computer. And then I started writing for recovery magazines, addiction recovery magazines in 2012. And people liked my style because I was very no bullshit. I was funny. I was irreverent. I swore. I wasn't like unicorns and rainbows. Everything's amazing. And the God spirit and bullshit. I was like fucking, you know, and I'd lead you through like, you know, whatever gnarly shit I was going through. Cause I continued to be sort of an epic fuck up. And so a friend of mine got a sober comic friend, got a book deal. And I just said, will you pass along some of my writing and just see what he thinks? And the guy flipped out and he was like, I fucking love your style. He was just like, oh, yeah, I really got lucky. He was like, I fucking love your style. He was like, let's have a fucking phone call. And I was like, okay. He's like, do you have an idea for a book? And I'm like, I do. And I pitched him my idea and he goes, write it. And so I wrote about 80 pages and then he was like, whoa, slow down. Like, you know, like make it more novelistic, make characters that come back in, flesh it out more. Cause I was used to writing editorial writing, which was like a magazine, you know, like 1200 words. And then you tie it up in a bow and you're done, you know?
Right.
And so then I rewrote it and sent him like 130 pages. He was like, great. Now write the proposal. And the proposal is like how you sell a book, how the agent sells a book, which is like, mm-hmm. why did you write the book? What's your platform? Comparing it to 5 books that are similar and why it's better or different. You know, testimonials from people, a sample, you know, all that shit. And we sold it. And it was like a fucking wow. dream come true. Yeah, it was a dream come true.
I can't even, yeah, I mean, I,
and then
that
my
would
whole
be a dream come
life
true.
exploded right after it. Like,
really?
It was released in September 2017, and my whole life fell apart right after that.
What? Was that the breakup?
Well, I got dumped in March okay. by my boyfriend that was living with me, who was the happy ending of the book. So that was great. So that's always when people discover the book. Yeah, they're always like, it's like now it's like four and a half years later, because it takes so long for it to be edited and copy set and mm-hmm. you know, copy edited and the fucking, so everyone's like, I love the happy ending. Are you still with him? And I'm like, oh, you know, fucking, you know, I'll be like, no, that bitch is long gone, you know, but I'm still sober. Hi, you know. I mean, now we're shopping the series. It was optioned. It's in turnaround. You know, Hollywood's tough. I'm sure you've had pilots mm-hmm, and people. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other experience.
I have a show in development right now. It's been like a year and a half, the right. process so far. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's so, like, yeah. it moves so fucking slow.
I know. You want to kill yourself. Yeah.
It's crazy. I'm like, yeah, is this normal? I guess it is. Totally. Yeah. I don't.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we had it. We had a script and it wasn't quite right. And we got the, you know, it was shopped around and we got the rights back. And now we have a new script and we're shopping it around. And it's like, you know, I'm like, are people reading it? Why is no one passed? You know, I'm like, I don't think they're even reading it. And my producer's like, they're fucking yeah. calm down. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. and then you're getting notes and you're getting this and, you know, it's all like, oh, God. It's just, it's a whole other hell than publishing. It's totally different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing to be broke. Being broke is fantastic. I mean, I was like, grew up with all this money and now I'm like been broke for like fucking like 8 years. And I'm like, okay, I got it. Like I got the lesson. Like I'm ready to have money. Like totally got the lesson. Totally clear. Totally clear on the value of money and budgeting. Like totally got it.
God, haha, funny joke, enough.
Yeah, I was like, got it, thank you. Like, totally, we can switch it around now. Lesson learned.
Did you make money from the book?
I was given a quite a big advance. And so you have to pay your advance mm-hmm. back before you get like a royalty.
You do?
Back. Yes.
Oh.
So that's the best part of going with a big publisher, because you get like 5% of each book. Of each sale. So it takes fucking a shitload of books to pay back your thing. So, So then during the pandemic happened. Hi, like, so I started a podcast like every other person on the planet. And,
what's the name of your podcast?
It's called Rehab Confidential. So it's like a very irreverent look at drug addiction, drug policy, rehabs. It's with a social worker. We have politicians on, we have athletes on, we have movie stars on, we had dank recovery memes on this week, you know, that does dank recovery.
Oh
memes
yeah, on. Yeah, yeah. That's fun.
Yeah. Like, you know, and it was like that was fun. And so we just like kind of mixed it up and, so that's been interesting having that. You know, that's another thing where you're like, I'm going to make money immediately and get sponsors and just blow the fuck up.
Totally.
Like, oh. Yeah. But yeah, you're like, oh, it's a really slow process and it takes time. And okay. Like, oh, God, all of it. I mean, it's just all been a lesson in patience. I'm like, So yeah, during the pandemic, that just kind of all happened. My mom got dementia. My dad got cancer. I got perimenopausal. Sorry. Yay. I quit vaping and it's just been a really difficult time, but I also started to really do some inner work. Like I started seeing a relationship mm-hmm. coach. I was like, okay, why am I picking assholes? I'm picking, mm-hmm. I see a pattern here and it's following me. So I have a part to do with it.
Tell me what they said. Is it repeating like a parent thing?
Of course it is. You know that.
Yeah. 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 You're fine. Yeah. Right.
Okay. I'm chasing my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who now has dementia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I didn't used to think she could hear me and see me or pay attention to me. Part of the problem, probably one of the reasons I became even a comic, you know, when I was a comic mm-hmm. for 5 years, it was like, look at me, pay attention to me, laugh at me, see me, you know? So now we're looking at like that. And I just keep picking men that are like totally emotionally unavailable, like over and over and over again.
Totally. Like, yeah. That was all of my
painful. It's so fucking painful. Mm-hmm. And I'm anxiously attached, of course. So I'm like,
me too. Me.
Yeah. Right. I need fun. You know,
we're so similar.
Like, right. So I'm like, I need constant. If you don't write me back right away. Oh my God.
How many crazy have you ever had like one of those experiences where you sent like literally 1,000 text messages?
No.
Oh.
Because what I'll do is I'll get really mad and then I just withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
I just withdraw. Then I'm pouting.
Steven.
Now I'm
I was going to say Steven seems like he wants to come say hi.
Oh, Amy. Okay.
Dresner. Come over here. Just pop by, but cover your dick with the toiletry bag for fun.
I want to see his dick. Come on. I haven't seen a dick in 3 years. Come on.
He's naked.
Hi. Hi, baby.
I can't hear you, but I feel you. You're a good person, and thank you for everything you've done for me.
Oh, I love you.
He's naked.
Did you talk about one
flavor?
The egg scene in Cool Hand Luke?
My dad wrote that.
Cool Hand Luke. I've never seen it.
My dad wrote the egg scene in Cool Hand Luke. He was.
Oh, he's talking in the background.
A podcast with a married couple. What's it? Two alcoholics that are married and a podcast in the same room. What's it like? Can they shut the fuck up and stop interrupting each other? That was like a window into it. That was amazing. My dad wrote The Iger Sanction with Clint Eastwood. My dad wrote the egg scene in Clam Luke, even though, you know, my dad wrote a lot of early MASH. My dad wrote Zorro the Gay Blade, which has become like a cult like thing.
Wow.
He wrote April Fools with Jack Lemmon and Catherine Deneuve. He wrote all kinds of stuff. And it's like, he's really on me to write the second book because so much interesting shit has happened since mm-hmm. Since the end of the first book. And it's like, you know, there's so many books about like getting sober, but like, what about mm-hmm. after you get sober? That's when it's really, once you stop killing
totally,
yourself.
Totally.
What's life really like? Like, I don't know how to fucking do anything. I have no fucking skill sets. I've been in a bubble for 25 fucking years mm-hmm. and now I'm fucking 50 and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know how to fucking do anything. And I'm like weirdly emotionally like, you know, I don't think you can use that word anymore, but emotionally.
I know what you want to say.
Disabled. Little, like behind the
retarded.
Curve. Yeah. Right. So, you know, yeah, I'm like really immature.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to.
Have you started a second book?
You know, I'm working on the 3 pages for my agent and my dad just keeps going, fall on your fucking pen. Like my dad used to just bang stuff mm-hmm. out and he's 83 and he's just like, this is boring. Like, be scared later. I don't give a shit. Like, I'm 83. Move it along. I want to see this thing get published, you know?
So he's super encouraging. That's awesome.
My dad is my world. My dad is my world. My dad was editing all of my pieces always. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
He also didn't read the whole book because he didn't want to hear me like fucking randos and like shooting coke in my neck.
Yeah.
Like, I lived through enough of that I don't really need to read that. And he doesn't listen to the podcast. He's like, I'd like to maybe one day think of you as my daughter and not as a recovering.
Oh, like, that's really, that's sweet, but it's also funny.
I know it's weird to me though. It's like, I don't know. I've become kind of like, you know, like I do speaking and all that kind of like, why can't he just be like proud of the fact that I kind of came through and that I'm alive? It's sort of miraculous.
But, he is.
You know, he is. He said, you are the light of my life and I'm so proud of you and you're my hero. It's kind of like, oh, mm-hmm. But my mom is just like on another planet now.
Yeah.
And that's super hard. But, yeah, so the relationship coaching shit is exactly fucking what you think. It's all.
So what kind of stuff are you learning?
I'm learning when you see a red flag to fucking walk away instead of fucking when someone tells you like, hey, I'm not interested in a relationship or anything committed. I just want something, no strings attached. And I'm like, challenge accepted. You know what I mean? Like,
I see that was like, that was my biggest problem too. Like some, like a guy would be like, I'm not looking for something, but I would think I was special and I was going to change your mind. Or they just didn't realize yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
My magical pussy is going to convince you otherwise. You've never met a unicorn like this. Yeah. But like, like when someone shows you who they are, believe them. And then it was like,
I was just going to say that. That's what I was thinking to say next. Yeah,
it's really hard. I mean, it was just so sad. She goes, well, I said, I want someone who's emotionally available. And she goes, what would available look like to you? And I started crying. And I was like, wow, this is loaded. Okay. and so it was like, that's, there was your weird like thing. I'm like, I start crying and you're like laughing, you psychopath.
No, because I'm laughing because it's like you probably don't realize then you have to be emotionally available. It's like we're looking for these things, but are we being, we have to be what we're looking for.
Right. So it's like if I'm picking emotionally unavailable people, am I really emotionally available or am I afraid of intimacy? Yeah. Right. Because then it's safe. If you're fucking not available and I'm like, please love me, please love me, please. And you're like, you know, then I have that chase and the challenge or whatever. And so just withdrawing. Also, she had me meditating and that's been a game changer. I started meditating in early sobriety. I studied TM and like people could, it changed me so fucking much that my roommate at the time, not who you know, but my roommate in sober living could tell when I had meditated and when I hadn't. That's how different I was on a day-to-day basis. She was like, I can't tell if they're changing your meds, but like you're a completely different person when you meditate.
Yeah. I just started TM.
You did? Awesome.
Yeah.
So she just said, just start 5 minutes a day and then up to 10 when you want to do more. And so I'm only doing 10. And it's like, I just feel like more centered and like things like that will like fuck me up, will fuck me up for much less time. And then I go back to center or I just go, oh, whatever. Totally. Like I'm like less, things roll off my back before I get really, really bent about shit really easily. And same. That was fucking scary. You know what I mean? So that's been a big change. And I think that you're right. I think that me being looking at my own stuff and feeling worthy, I think that's the other thing is feeling worthy and having self-esteem and being like, I'm fucking rad. And if you don't get that, that's your problem. Totally. Not, I'm going to prove to you how fucking rad I am.
Yeah, I feel like something that like a lot of, you know, women don't understand when they're dating or even men too. It's like people, but specifically women, because when you have sex with a guy right away, obviously it creates oxytocin and, you know, it's a drug.
That's a
it makes you
huge
think
error.
That you
like,
want to be with them. And oftentimes, like, you know, a girl will fuck someone once and then they'll be like, oh, I want to be with this guy. Or like, if he likes me, then I want to be with him. Like they chose me, but it's like, do you like him? Like, do you want to be with him?
Totally. Totally. Mm-hmm. That's
like people don't like, under. Yeah. It's like
people I was always
don't
like,
give
they
them-
like me. So then I'm interested versus like, do I even like them? Why do I want them to like me? What's that fucking hole inside me? What's that validation? So they pick, no, the women pick, you know what I mean? Or we pick each other. Also, what I learned through my sex addiction was that fucking people, you bond to them, even if you don't fucking like them, then you're bonded to that person. Even if you don't like them, you want to, you're upset if they don't call you again, or they're upset if that, you know what I mean? And I was like, so I don't know, I guess she's going to give me like a dating plan and like, I'll move forward like that. And like, you know, I just, I'm going to have to push like the sex thing down the road.
Have you done the exercise where you write out like your ideal mate and then you be those things?
No, we're still in the middle of it all.
That's
no,
you're still what?
We're still in the middle of it. I'm still in the middle of the coaching. I haven't finished it yet. Did you
well
do
that's
that?
Like a Yeah, I mean, that's like an exercise I learned from like 12-step. But basically, you write out like the characteristics.
Yeah, I've done that, and nothing manifested. Is that how you manifested Steven?
Well, me and Steven, this is different because it's the first time I was friends with someone first before I
know. I think that's interesting. What do you suggest?
It changes everything, because in the past I was never friends with the guys that I had dated. I don't even think while we were dating we were actually friends, because like I kind of hated them all, but like, yes, I was convincing myself to be with them because I liked the idea of them, or I thought that I liked them, or
God, girl. I thought the life we were gonna
like, I thought our lot, like, you know, it's like you're planning out and you have like the fantasy of their lives. Like, I was dating a guy who was such an asshole, but he had a house in Malibu. So I was just like right. I would ignore the way I felt in the relationship because I was connected to the fantasy of being at the house in Malibu with our children.
Oh, God, yeah. Totally. Oh, yeah. I know. Is that the fucking worst? Right. You meet someone. Right. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. You're already like, this is going to be my wedding dress. And I want a, like a rose cut diamond. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, crazy. Like reel it back. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think girls like really skip ahead into the fantasy of like a girlfriend of mine, went on, I think, one date with a guy, but he's like super wealthy. And I know that that's what she's never mind.
So dead right now. Well, there's the filter that you thought you didn't have. You obviously have it. It's a little delayed because you start, like, you might want to, it should have cut in a little earlier, but it does exist and it's making progress.
I'm crying.
That was amazing. I was like, did she just cut out? Oh no, she stopped herself. I was like, hello. Oh my God, that was
no,
so
I just have friends
good.
Who did. You know what I mean, though? It's like I have friends who did.
Oh, God, that was amazing.
That are wealthy. And I'm like, you just want to be with them because they're wealthy. I don't even think you know them.
I already was married to someone who was wealthy. And I can tell you that does not make you happy. You know, when totally. I was with my ex-boyfriend, we were broke as fuck. And we were really happy. Mm-hmm. We were living in a fucking pool house without a bathroom. And it was like, we were totally
But was there a pool?
Yeah, you're like, yeah, and we were really fucking happy. And so it's like, I know I've had money and not had money. And so I know that money makes things easier, but it doesn't make you happy. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly not the key to a fucking relationship, you know, good relationship. But it's like, yeah, but unfortunately, your relationship with Steven, like, I'm really good friends with a couple guys right now. And I'm like, I know that eventually he's going to be emotionally available to me. And I'm like, oh no, like, we're such close friends. It's also for me, it's hard as a recovering sex and love addict, when I'm really, really close friends with someone or partners with someone, I get confused what that connection is. So then I'm like, is this, this has to be a romantic connection, right? We can't be this close and talking all this, talking every day and it not be a fucking romantic connection, right? You know, I get
and then you make a move and they're like, what are you doing?
I know. Well, thank God for COVID and I'm all paranoid. So I'm like, I'm not seeing anyone in person. So that keeps me from like lunging at someone, which is what happened on my last date. So I hadn't really dated because I was so fucked up. And I went on a coffee date with someone and I told this on Steven's thing. And I was like, it's been 2.5 years. I'll be totally well-behaved. It's Starbucks. You know, it's at the Pavilions. It's the day, you know. And I lunged.
That's the one you chose? You could have chose any Starbucks. Why does it have to be the Pavilions one?
No, not inside the Pavilions. The one
on the street. Not
in there.
Okay, that's better. But,
so he walked into my car.
I was like, that's what's wrong with your dating.
Well, it's just supposed to be a coffee date and he'd come from like jujitsu.
Yeah,
I was
like,
okay. Like, I was like, how much trouble can I get in? It's like during the day, it's 12:30, it's coffee, it's a public place. Like, I'll be fine. Totally not fine. Like, completely attracted to the person to the point where, like, I couldn't sit comfortably on the stool. Like, my pussy was like, oh my God, we like someone. We're awake again. It's been 2.5. I'm like, stop it. And I kept moving around. I was like, he's like, what's going on over there? I'm like, she likes you. He's like, okay, weirdo. Like, I was so.
You said that? No. No.
You think you have a filter problem? Yeah. And then I fucking lunged at him in the fucking parking lot. He walked me to my car and I just went, oh, I fucking like went in for a kiss. And then we're like making out. And then like, I was like, I gotta go. And I got in my car and then he got in the other side and, so.
Wait, so you know what's good about making the list about the characteristics?
What?
So really quick, just to explain it. It's like, okay, so if you were trying to, you're writing out your ideal mate on like an index card. So you're going to write things like, you know, sense of humor, introduces me to their friends, you know,
hi,
like,
right?
Isn't afraid to post me on social media.
As their girlfriend, as their girlfriend.
Yeah.
Not as their friend. Totally. Not as their fucking shorty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not as someone
yeah, you know, likes, yeah. right, likes yeah. to travel, you know, likes food, right. whatever. So then, you know, what that helps you with is to get clarity. So when you go out with someone after that, you kind of refer back to your list and you're like, oh, they don't have any of these things.
Right.
So this person isn't going to be a match for me.
And then I'll you also have to be interesting, things. Though, just a counterpoint is that I was talking to someone else who's in recovery, normal recovery, and also a recovering sex and love addict. And he was, you know, doing a dating plan and not, you know, really, really like 7 dates and not fucking people and like that kind of stuff. Just like,
yeah.
And some of these girls checked off all the boxes, but the fucking chemistry wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, but see, that's the thing for us. Chemistry is like, for me, chemistry is like everything. I'll throw away everything else. It's like, oh, you live like in a garbage bag and like, you know, like, you know what I mean? And have a scooter and like, you know, want me to pay all the bills and like, you know, cool. Like, you know,
yeah.
I mean, but not anymore. But it's like, so I think it has to be a balance between like, is this what I'm looking for? Cause I'm looking for long-term. I want to get married. Like I'm not ready. I don't want
to. Totally.
Like I'm like, I don't want a partner. Like I'm building my career. I'm going to sell my series. Like I want a partner, you know, mm-hmm. That's been really hard during COVID to be alone, single and alone during COVID. I was like, I'm going to fucking, I mean, I felt total castaway shit. I was like, am I going to like fucking put a face on a beach ball or whatever the fuck it is?
Like yeah,
soccer
yeah,
ball
yeah.
and talk to Wilson. Someone. I mean, I got really lonely and depressed and my head was like, you're a fucking piece of garbage and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it's like, I think there's a middle ground between all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, everyone's like, you know, and I don't know that it's necessarily dating in the rooms or out of the rooms. I think there's pros and cons both. Because I've done both.
Right. Yeah. There I was kind of like, I'm not going to.
Huh?
I know. And then I part of me was like, I don't want to date guys who are in the rooms because I think right. they're like crazy. But right. Steven happened to be an exception. I mean, I didn't plan the Steven thing. It just happened, right. you know? Right. And I think the best also, like, you know, I think guys come into your life when you least expect it, when you're doing really well.
Right. When you're doing your own thing and not looking
for thinking about it.
Says,
yeah.
Yeah. I know.
It's true. It's so true.
So I'm kind of just
same
like,
with like the work stuff too, you know?
Yeah. I'm just like focusing on my shit and I'm just like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know? Like you've got to be like, okay with being alone. And so like, you know, I guess what I mm-hmm. found interesting was that I was alone for, you know, a couple of years and celibate. And I was like, oh, like it'll be chill. And it wasn't. As soon as I reengaged, all those old obsessive sloth shit fucking came right back.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, whoa.
Totally.
I was like, oh, that shit's just been in hiding. It's been in a box. I haven't had it at all.
Yeah.
Like I need to do the work on it, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When your AA disease is doing push-ups and your slaw disease is doing Kegels, just like fucking waiting to, you know, just fucking waiting.
Oh my God, it's amazing. Oh, yeah. I'm so fucking dead, you know? Right now. Oh, so good. Oh my God.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for coming on the pod.
Oh my God, this was a blast.
Yeah, this is so much fun. tell the listeners where we can find your book, My Fair Junkie, and your podcast and your social and whatever else you want to pimp out.
You can get My Fair Junkie. You can Google it. It's been out for a couple of years. Amazon. I know a lot of people are like, ew, fuck Jeff Bezos. But like, you know, if you, a Libri, like, it's like, you just Google My Fair Junkie and like, it's all over the place. You can get a used copy, which will not help my sales at all, but just read it. And the audiobook, everyone loves the audiobook. I narrated it and it's really funny and you can hear my voice.
Cool.
My hoarse, manly voice. Yeah. I'm at Amy Dresner, AmyDresner at everywhere, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, and the podcast is called Rehab Confidential. And if you think I'm inappropriate and obnoxious, wait till you meet my co-host, who, like, literally my eyes pop out of my fucking head when he fucking talks. I was like, oh my fucking God. He, like, literally doesn't give a shit what people think. And I'm like, is this good? Is this, or is it bad? I don't know. Like, I kind of almost want that level of, like, not giving a shit, but I'm also like, wow, really? Like, mm-hmm. Are you dead inside? Like, hello? Like, you can't say that. So Rehab Confidential with Joe Schrank and Amy Dresner. It's we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Apple, we're on Spotify, we're on Stitcher. We've got a website, rehab-confidential.com. It's really funny. And I just got 10.6 thousand followers now. So I'm really happy. I know, because I can do a swipe up. That's all I've ever wanted in my fucking life. That's
Oh, yeah. They're fun, right?
I know. I was like, how many is Chelsea? I was like, oh. Chelsea has like 16. I was like,
I have the least out of all my friends.
Well, fucking, what? I need tips.
I know. I'm like, how are they getting these followers? I don't. Yeah,
I mean,
I'm trying
need
to get
tips. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I don't know how to. I don't know what the hashtags are. I don't know the algorithms. I don't know the best time to post. Like, I don't know shit.
Wait, will you tell me where you get your shirts from? I like your shirt you're wearing now.
Oh, this one was just from, I forget what this was from. Yeah, I'll text you everything. You can go to, I think it's, I'll text you all the links on Etsy. And there's a guy.
Yeah, let's keep it secret.
And there's also, they'll let you come down and like totally go through their warehouse.
Where? This place?
The Both secret places. Place? Yeah, they love me. Yeah, you can go
Yay.
Down.
In like, LA?
Yes.
Okay. Are they expensive?
No, they're both really, really actually affordable.
Okay.
And you should, there was really just there's a vintage, I think Pickwick, whatever, like a open air market coming up. It was really, it was really fun. I went and I got some cool t-shirts and then I'm going to go to the Silver Lake flea market, I think this weekend, which.
I don't know about it.
Which people say is really cool now. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks, doll. Bye.
Bye.